Some people think that frivolity is frivolous, but I am simply not ready to go that far. Hello, everyone. Martin Zender here at the Revelation Series. And King Solomon, what can you say? One of my favorite guys, one of my favorite Bible guys. He's such a card, such a live wire, such a fun guy at all the parties. He was the guy with the lampshade on his head, dancing around and being frivolous. No, exercising frivolity, which may or may not have been frivolous. Now, we're going to pick up right away here where I left off. We were at the end of chapter 1. Solomon applied his heart to know wisdom as well as to know about raving and frivolity. Well, somebody has to do it. Somebody has to know about raving and frivolity. I have to remind you why we're doing this in the first place. Why are we doing this? Why am I in Proverbs, or why am I in Ecclesiastes? Oh yeah, I'm trying to convince you that becoming something in the world is not all it's cracked up to be. And the poster boy for that is Solomon. Why? Why ultimately am I trying to do that? All right, well, I'll back it up a level if that's what you want. Because I don't want you being suckered into the one world government and the new frivolous order. It'll be the new world order, but it will appear to be frivolous and fun. And it will be humanitarian, yes. It will be altruistic. Of course it will be. It will be probably green. Mm-hmm. It'll be green. And it'll come down to earth like the bubble that carried Glinda the Good Witch into Oz. Therefore, it is not to be trusted. I don't trust Glinda. She's just a little cagey. Why did she tell Dorothy at the end of the movie, "You had the information with you the whole time"? What? You knew the answer the whole time. Why didn't you tell me that at the beginning when you first bubbled into Oz? You could have told me that I had the answer the whole time, that all I had to do was click my heels together. And the Scarecrow said, "Well, why didn't you tell her?" I can't blame him. Scarecrow comes up and says, "Why don't you tell her at the very beginning?" She had to learn for herself. You know what? I suppose she had a point there. I'm looking here on my desk. I'd never saw this before. I have a Glinda type of bubble here. Look at this. I found this paperweight on my desk. Here comes Glinda. All right. Forget about it. Now, so don't be tricked. Don't be tricked by anything that floats to earth in a bubble and looks like it's altruistic, humanitarian, and green. For in much wisdom is much vexation. This is where we left off yesterday. And he who adds knowledge adds pain. Knowledge is pain. And Paul says knowledge puffs up. And I get this all the time. Knowledge is pain, Martin. The more I know, the more I suffer. The more I know, the more burden I carry. I understand. I feel the same way quite often. And with knowledge comes pain. Paul says knowledge puffs up. And some people conclude, well, I don't want to get puffed up, so therefore I won't get knowledge. Nah, that's a bad mistake. Of course you want knowledge. And of course you're going to get puffed up because knowledge does puff up. Paul says it like a fact. But here's the secret to that. Don't you think God knows how to unpuff you? Oh yeah, God has many clever, ingenious, and effective ways of unpuffing you. So don't worry about getting puffed up. That's the least of my worries. In fact, if I ever get puffed up, I enjoy it for as long as I can. And I hold on to it. To the last dregs of it, because I know that God's going to take it away. So some people say, "Martin, I hate to give you a big head, but, you know," and then they proceed to tell me something wonderful about my work or how I've helped them. And I always tell them, please give me a big head. Try. I've been knocked down so many times and humbled so many times, it's really difficult for me to get a big head more than 10 seconds. I'm serious. So go ahead and try to give me a big head for more than a half a minute. You just won't do it because it never lasts. It's ridiculous, actually. I wish it would last longer than it does, but it doesn't. Chapter 2. Going to go to one more chapter through Ecclesiastes. This will be sufficient to help you. Then I'm going to go to the forgery that has been known as the protocols of the elders of Zion. that purports to map out a Jewish conquest of the world. And it's so cool that you see these things happening, but I don't necessarily believe that they're stated to be happening or that they're consciously planned to be happening. Anyway, many of you may differ from me with that. That's your problem. Just kidding. You might be right, but then again. Chapter 2, I said in my heart, do come then, let me probe you with rejoicing. I like how he personalizes knowledge and he personalizes raving and frivolity. He says, come then, let me probe you with rejoicing. Now look at what is good. I like that. Look at what is good. I forward this activity. I promote it. Look at what is good. It's true that the eye is not filled with seeing, but God gave us eyes for a reason, and he made the earth beautiful for a reason. He made roses to bud for a reason. He made cute little doggies and kitties the way he did for a reason, and we're to look at them. Look at what is good, but behold, even this is vanity. Sorry, doggies and kitties. Mirth, I said, is a raving, and rejoicing, what then is it achieving? So, mirth was nice during the mirthful moment, but it became old, it waxed old, and it became something that disappointed in the end. But better to be mirthful and be disappointed than never to be mirthful at all. Better to rave and realize that it's vanity than never to rave at all. The old saying, better to love and lose than never to have loved at all. I happen to agree with that. People say it's so hard to go back to work after you've been on vacation. This is my saying. Better to vacation and return than never to vacation at all. So nobody's telling you to not have mirth, to not rave, to not graze. You're just going to find out that you're grazing on wind, that mirth is raving and rejoicing. What is it achieving? Okay, verse 3. I explored within my heart by stimulating my flesh with wine. I love these specific verses that give us a blueprint of how to have the Solomon experience. Or you can just avoid that and come to the wisdom of Solomon. This is what I would like to do. We all would like to bring our kids to the knowledge that we have attained. Like we've obtained all this great knowledge from a lifetime of experiences. And don't you just want to give it to your kids? Yeah, you just want them to have it. And they can just take up where you left off. But no, they have to learn some of the same lessons. I explored within my heart by stimulating my flesh with wine while my heart was leading with wisdom. This was one heck of a great experiment. His heart was still leading with wisdom, and then he experimented. How much wine can I drink and like my wisdom is still here? So he stimulated his body with the wine, but his heart still led with wisdom. And at the same time, this is what he did by getting hold of frivolity. So step number one, he maintained his wisdom, explored his heart by stimulating his flesh with wine, and he got hold of frivolity. And the purpose was, until I should see just where good may be for the sons of humanity, I may discover the corner in which good resides. Wouldn't that be a great thing? I'm going to find it. Until I should see just where good may be in what they do, that is humanity, under the heavens during the number of their days in their lives. He really doesn't reach a conclusion here at the end of verse 3, which upsets me. I guess we'll have to keep reading. Let's do that. Verse 4 of chapter 2, Ecclesiastes. I made great things as my works. Oh yeah, this guy, no halfway measures for Solomono. He did everything to the utmost. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself. Because his eye lusted upon dandelions and ferns and plants of all manner. And I planted in them trees of every fruit. Fruit trees are amazing. God has provided us with juicy, plump juice balls that hang from the ends of trees. It's a miracle. Nobody knows how they grow. It's amazing. I made reservoirs of water for myself. Okay? To irrigate from them the sprouting grove of trees. Oh, well, it's perfectly practical. He plants a grove of trees of every fruit, and then he needs to water them, so he plants, he makes reservoirs, and he irrigates the trees from the water in the reservoirs. And he goes right from this to verse 7, I acquired men servants and maid servants. He goes right from trees into the acquiring of men servants and maid servants. Well, why not? You need stuff a lot of work to be done, and you need help, people to pour your wine, people to pick the vintage, people to, you know, dab the bottom of your lip if you happen to spill some wine there as you're testing your heart in the middle of a rave. So, of course, you need men servants, and especially maid servants. And any sons born in the household became mine. Ooh, that's a hard sell. Come on in. I'd like you to be a concubine. I'd like you to be the wife, but I'll have you know that any son you produce is mine, all mine. And they said, okay, because who wouldn't want to be in the service of King Solomon? It was a big deal back then. Still a big deal, I guess, to be in the service of important personages. People like to be where celebrities are, where politicians are. People like to be seen with celebrities and politicians. And my uncle, James Prideaux, in fact, he changed his name, all that. He was all that. This is my dad's older brother. Older brother. And he wrote movies, television movies for Katharine Hepburn. If you've ever seen the movie The Man Upstairs, made for television with Katharine Hepburn, that's my uncle. Anyway, he wrote a book about Kate. He wrote about how he hobnobbed with her. And of course, he loved to be seen with her. My uncle was a name dropper. He was. And he talked about going to the movies one time in New York with Katharine Hepburn, and Hepburn insisted that they go to the front row. So if Kate wants to go to the front row, that's where you go. So he went to the front row, and Kate kept turning around before the movie started because she wanted to be seen, and he wanted to be seen with her. This is the way of celebrity. This is just the nature of the children of this eon. Moreover, okay, we go from trees to maidservants, men servants, to cattle, herds, and flocks. They all were his. Abundant cattle, herds, and flocks. Whatever came forth was mine, all mine, more than all who were over Jerusalem before me. So nobody had more kids or more cows than Solomon. I collected also silver and gold for myself. It naturally follows. Verse 8, the valuable treasures of kings and provinces. Not just kings, but provinces. We're about to finish this. I thought I'd turn my phone off. Oh, this is my sister. I'm going to accept it and put her on the air. This will be funny. Why? 10 things are ringing here. Why did Steve Jobs do this to me? Kelly, I made a mistake of not turning my phone off. I'm actually doing the show right now, and you're being recorded.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Say hi to everybody. Yeah, this is my sister Kelly here, and she's at the headquarters of Stark and Hartman. Aren't you? Tell me what shape is your desk in this morning? Oh, it looks like Albert Einstein's desk before he died. Yes, I recommend to all our viewers and listeners that they go and to Google and type in Albert Einstein's desk the day he died. And if any of you are messy, you will see that messiness belongs to genius. Isn't that right, Kelly?
Yeah, except I don't think there's a cat in that picture.
Oh, there's no cat in that picture? Are you saying that you...
There's one actually that likes to watch your show.
There's a...
I have a picture of her watching.
There's a cat on your desk that likes to watch the show. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I need a picture of that. All right. I will call you back as soon as I'm finished with the show. Thank you very much. All right. Nice talking to you. Bye. That's a good kid. That's my sister, Kelly. 2 years younger than me. My only sister. She does a lot to get this show to you. And she's a sweetheart. We only had one argument our entire lives, as I recall. One argument. And that was over a Monopoly game. It almost ruined us. The argument, I can't even remember what the argument was, but we used to play Monopoly with the neighbor kid, Steve, for days. Some of these games would go on for days, and one of the key arguments was, can you collect rent while you're in jail? And we had the rule book, of course, but it was a bit ambiguous on that. But it may have been this. Can you collect rent on a property that you've mortgaged? You know, when you've landed on, say, somebody's Kentucky Avenue with three houses and you owe them $180 and you have to mortgage Connecticut Avenue, so you turn it over and they give you $80, whoopee-doo, but that allows you to pay your creditor. And then can you then collect rent on Connecticut Avenue should someone land on Connecticut Avenue? That was the question. Maybe I'll call her tomorrow and we can renew this argument. it's the stupid things in life. Right, that, but we are not these days, are we, arguing about things of inconsequential significance, which was a huge redundancy I just uttered there. But no, we are arguing about things of consequence that also matter. And because of that, God is giving us wisdom. And wisdom is a pain, yes, but we're not going to reject it so that we don't have pain. We're not going to reject it so that we don't get puffed up. God can heal your pain and God can cure your puff up. Just watch it happen. It sounds something like this.